history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some stories there right around you that really ought to be told. We don't want to miss out on incredible stories that change our perspective, and we want to honor our veterans for their service and the sacrifices they've made. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we do so, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. You are in for a treat today with a centenarian. He just turned 100 years old. He also just got back from Pearl Harbor. Pearl Harbor survivor Mickey Ganich of San Leandro, California, is our guest today. But we're sitting here in the City of Oakland Senior Center inside a pretty historic building. This is the Veterans Memorial Building here in
the
Oakland?
The Memorial Building, but this is the only active, really, veterans organization that meets here regularly. We have American Legion meets down the hall, but they're just here part of the week, and we're the only one. So few of us are here that they renamed it Senior Centers so that all seniors are available here. They have dances, they have all kinds of classes, everything here. And so about 4 or 5 years ago, they started calling it Senior Center, but that's all right.
And you're here how many days a week?
Only 5 days a week here.
Only 5 days a week, yeah. For a full work day, basically. Yeah. How do you get here?
I drive. In fact, I just renewed my driver's license for five years.
Till you're 105.
Yeah, about that. And then I'll renew it then. And then when I get to 110, I'll just wonder, maybe I'll renew it and maybe I won't. Depends on how I feel at that time.
Well, and I just bring that up because I want people to understand that we're talking to someone who's 100 years old, but is still here 5 days a week volunteering. He also volunteers at the VA clinic, has spent more than 9,000 hours doing that. And he's the head usher at his Methodist church. How long are you going to do that at the church?
Another 10 years or so.
Someone told you it's a lifetime appointment?
Lifetime, because the guy before me died there, so maybe it's a lifetime. When I expire around, when I'm about 110, 115 there, then I'll actually be quit being the usher then.
Fair enough, yeah. Fair enough. Well, I know a lot of people will be interested in hearing what your secret is for being so active at 100 years old, but don't tell us just yet. Let's build the suspense on that. I want to take you back in time, because there are a lot of parts of your story that are really incredible for those of us to understand here today. We're going to talk plenty about December 7th, 1941, but I want to understand your life before that, because you're one of 14 kids?
14 kids. I'm number 12 out of 14 kids. I'm a farm boy from Ohio there. Lived on the farm all my life. Well, not all my life, the first 19 years of my life. And then I joined the Navy, and so I haven't lived there permanently since then.
So what was that life like growing up in Ohio, and what was the name of your hometown?
Mogadore, Mogadore. That's a little town, suburb of Akron, Ohio, northern Ohio. But this is a small town. I think its population was 2,100. I think that counts the cats and dogs, too. So it wasn't too big of a town. But
well, I'm sure there are plenty of animals on your farm, too, that could have counted.
Milking cows and feeding the hogs and chicken and ducks there. And we always had animals there. It's just a dairy farm, only 105 acres.
Only 105 acres.
Yeah.
That's why they needed so many kids. Yeah. And your folks were immigrants from Yugoslavia?
Yes. My father is Serbian, my mother's Russian. They both came from Belgrade area, which is the capital of Yugoslavia. Of course, it's split up now, but at that time, they only had one place, and that was the whole town. Now it's split up in various parts, but the immigrants came to this country.
And did they tell you much about that, about life in the old country, or why it was important for them to come to America?
Yeah, well, funny part of it is my father was really a draft dodger. They wanted to put him into the army there in Yugoslavia there, and that's against his will, and so he came to California in about 1890 and settled here, and he was a tailor, used to make clothes, and he found out from his relatives that he had here that they knew a seamstress back in Yugoslavia was really good at it, and they corresponded back and forth. They liked what they saw, and my father sent money to her and her father to come to this country. Never seen each other till then. Got married, and as a result, 14 kids, so it must have worked out all right.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be here.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, and there are a lot of people who wouldn't be here if you didn't make it through World War II, which we're going to talk about. But I'm just curious, because it sounds so much different from the life we know now. Yeah. So when you're one of 14 kids on a 105-acre farm in Ohio, what is that childhood like? A lot of chores?
Lots of chores there. The first thing, as soon as I got big enough to milk the cows, that's the main job for me, milking the cows. That's the old-fashioned way of milking there, and not with the automatic milker there. You do old-fashioned way, you did it by hand.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you could still do that if they needed you to.
Oh, yeah. All kinds of chores there. There's a fruit and vegetable mainly, so had all kinds of work to do at that time. Evidently, my dad wanted a lot of laborers there, and so as soon as we got of age there, we flew the coop there, because working 7 days a week here on a farm from before daylight to after dark there got kind of old there, so we flew the coop as soon as we got of age.
Well, and that was what I was curious about, you know, when you're in that kind of life, and then you go through the Great Depression as you did. Do you have some hopes and dreams, some ideas? Hey, when I get off of this farm someday, here's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, I wanted something there to a little bit more relaxing there, because my father believed in work, and it seemed like he invented work there for us to do. Relatives would come to our house on weekends there, and he'd always find some kind of work for us to do there. He wasn't very good at letting us play there. Work was for people to do. Got kind of old.
Is that why you got into sports? So you could have more time away from the farm?
Actually, in sports, I was always active in football. But my dad there wanted us home after school. In fact, I got paddled many, many times because I'd stay after school playing football or playing games there. And he said that isn't the place for it. And I got beat with switches there. Fly swatter is there, anything is handy there. In fact, I got hit with one time, he hit me with two before.
Ooh.
In fact, I still got the black and blue marks because there was a nail in it. So I got hit with that. I put my arm up to protect me from getting hit in the head there, because I stayed after school playing instead of coming home. So we had a pretty strict father.
I guess so. What'd you do when you finished up high school?
I was always active in sports. In fact, I played 2 years of high school, and I played 1 year of semi-pro football back there in the Akron area there. But the only jobs that's available was WPA, that's Work Progress Administration, at Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Herbert Hoover determined that a way of creating jobs there. Mm-hmm. And, but I saw no future in that, and I had a brother and sister living in Oakland, California, and they said, well, come on out there and we'll see what we can do. So I was able to get a job in a rubber company, Pacific Tire and Rubber Company in Oakland. I came to California in 1939.
80 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. What was it like here? I'm sure it's a little different now in 2019 than it was in 1939.
Well, it was a job, and it wasn't a job where on the farm where you had to work every day of the week. You had to nights off and weekends off, which made it a lot nicer than it was back on the farm. So I enjoyed it there.
But the rubber factory job didn't last that long either?
Well, they went on strike every year about Christmas time, and so I saw no future in that. And then the world situation was getting so bad in 1939, 1940, that the United States had a draft All men were 21 years and older. I had to register for the draft there. They said, you register for the draft and you go into the service, you're going to the Army. They said, you go in the Army here, you could be sleeping outside there and cold food there. And that wasn't for me, so I joined the Navy. So call me a draft dodger, too. So I joined the Navy January 21st in 1941. The next draft for the Army was going to be in the spring of 1941. So I wasn't going to wait till then there and see whether I was drafted or not there. And so I picked the Navy, and it wasn't steady enough work, so I gave it up after 23 years.
Only 23 years, yeah. Only the entirety of World War II and the Korean War and almost to the Vietnam War.
In fact, I was still in the service and Vietnam was going on, but I never got to Vietnam. In fact, I joined the Navy there January 21st, 1941, the Navy recruiting office, the post office in Oakland, down the street there. Ended up my Navy career at the Navy recruiting office, the post office in Oakland, October 10th, 1963. Mm-hmm. So the same place I started, same place I ended up at.
And a lot of things happened in between there.
Yes.
And here you thought by joining the Navy you might miss out on some of the worst stuff of World War II. You didn't have to go to North Africa or the Pacific as an Army soldier, but I don't think you knew what was going to happen on December 7th of 41.
No. We were ready to play a game. We had a game. I was on the ship's football team and made the first team on. I wasn't very big. I was pretty big. I was 170 pounds there. That was big in those days. Now if you're not 250, you're nothing there. So I joined the ship's football team, and we had a great team. And we scheduled to play USS Arizona for a fleet football championship, 1 o'clock, December 7, 1941. That was going to be the Super Bowl of the Navy. It was really important there. So we was going to do a little scrimmaging, get ready for the game, and leave the ship at 8 o'clock in the morning, December 7th. There was no place to change clothes. A little field was close by to us there. So we had all our padding on for the attack. When the attack came there, you go to your battle station. You don't have time to change clothes or anything. So up in the crow's nest, I went in my football uniform, all my padding on there, little trap door to get up there, pull myself through to get up there. That was my battle station. I was a lookout. Whether you're in port or not there, mm-hmm. You go where your battle station is.
Well, and I want people to understand how jolting of an interruption this was. How long had you been at Pearl as part of the Pennsylvania's crew before that day?
I joined the USS Pennsylvania August 15th, 1941. Mm-hmm. And so I was on the team on the ship itself for about 3 months or so before the war started.
So this is a pretty good adventure for an Ohio farm boy. I mean, you're out here in paradise. You get to play football for the Navy.
Yeah.
So that's what you did every weekend, was played somebody else in football?
Well, anybody, we beat. I think we had a 9-1 or a 10-1 record, something like that. We had a real good team, and we had a good record there to prove it.
And you played on the line?
I was a running guard. I protected the quarter. I wasn't big enough to be a receiver or heavy enough to carry the ball, so they used me for running interference and protecting the quarterback. That was my job.
With a leather helmet, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Not the fancy ones like we have nowadays.
I've had a lot of guys who played in that era tell me they think it was a safer game with leather helmets than it is now.
I think it was, because it still worked good for us.
But you played right there on Oahu, not far from the docks?
Yeah. It's the same place where the Aloha Stadium is right now.
Oh, okay.
Where they played this Pro Bowl, I think, is that they played it.
Yeah.
That's where the field was, where we were going to play against Arizona.
Well, and if you go to Aloha Stadium now, you can look out and see the Arizona Memorial.
Oh, yeah.
From the side of the stadium.
It's up on the hill.
They're actually going to be building a new one there now, too. Maybe they can bring you out for the dedication when they build a new stadium.
That would be nice.
So you'd done this before. This, you know, it's a routine Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Did you have any reason to believe there was any chance of the Japanese attacking?
Well, we'd been talking for months there whether we're getting a war or not, and we figured no one would bother us there. We got 8 battleships in port there. We're powerful. A country would be crazy to try to attack us. If there would be any problem at all, it'd be in the Philippines, so we don't have to worry about it. So what the policy was during the week there, the ships would go out to sea and maneuver around. around gunnery practice and all that, and be in port on the weekends there. The whole fleet would be in port practically. The only thing is, except for the aircraft carrier, aircraft carriers were not in port. They were taking planes. Admiral Halsey, when his aircraft carrier group were taking planes to Midway and Wake Island, so they were not in port. Fortunately, because that was the reason there that they were not in port, why there was no third attack, an attack on Pearl Harbor, because the aircraft carriers were not in port. The third attack for the aircraft carriers was the number one target, and the oil fields and repair facilities.
Which would have crippled
If that would have happened, we would have lost the war. We'd be talking Japanese now, because they would have took the war because the closest oil and closest repair facilities, 2,000 miles away, it would have been a disaster there. We were very fortunate, but bad weather had slowed the aircraft carriers up, and they were not in port. If it had been good weather, they'd been in port, we'd have been attacked. We'd have lost the war. It's that simple.
And there were so many other twists of fate like that throughout the nearly 4 years of war that followed. And there's much more to come with 100-year-old Pearl Harbor survivor Mickey Ganich of San Leandro, California. Make sure you visit hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook for photos and video of Mickey. And when we come back, more of how he experienced December 7th, 1941, aboard the battleship USS Pennsylvania. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.